Hello and welcome to Tip TV Finance, and me, Jenny Hammond and Zach Meir. And with us in the studio is Mark Oswald from ADM Investor Services. Mark, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Now, I want to start with the lead story in most of the financial news at the moment, and that's, of course, Tesco's have had a bit of a boost, up 8%, and they through the Booker deal. What do you make of this? Budgeon's a good buy?
Well, I think it's basically trying to secure their supply chains. It's probably good for Tesco's. The question is it actually going to be any good for farmers, amongst other people? It sort of, I guess, to some extent, also allows them to decouple from some of the other large consumer companies which have basically got stranglehold on the market, for instance, Unilever.
There's a bit of a cartel going on.
Yes, and on that basis, one wonders what might be said on the regulatory side. I think there needs to be some form of investigation. Letting this just go through in a laissez-faire style seems to be not the right way of doing things. We'll soon see what this government's corporate policies look like.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting test of that.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the slides. So most popular in business and finance, Beefeater restaurants are a drag, but Costa Coffee serves up success for Whitbread, and that's according to This Is Money. They haven't been doing so well for a while, Whitbread, have they?
That I wouldn't know.
I think, the first question is, who goes to Beefeater restaurants? Because I'm not quite sure what segment of the market that is.
I don't think it caters to anything anymore.
Same as the Aberdeen Steakhouse type of thing.
So, well, they do that sort of the carvery, don't they, Beefeater,
yes,
which is quite popular.
If you put it in the context of what's been happening with pubs over the past 10 to 15 years, it's hardly surprising that Beefeater are not exactly doing very well.
Okay, next slide. How gloomy Treasury got its Brexit sums wrong, and that's according to both our favourite newspaper, the Daily Mail.
So yes, well, to be fair, they normally get it wrong anyway, whether it's Brexit or otherwise, so it's not actually quite such a snide comment from the Daily Mail.
No, indeed. Most official sources are fairly good at getting things wrong. The only one where we'll make an exception is the Congressional Budget Office in the US, which no one pays any attention to, ironically, because they're good. Never mind.
Okay, next slide. So a banking crisis is likely to be avoided yet again in 2017 in light of another year of GDP growth exceeding 6%, said S&P Global Ratings credit analyst Chang Liao, and that's according to City AM.
I think this is the developments that we've had in China, particularly that last deluge of news yesterday before the Lunar New Year holidays, tells us there is going to be a step change in the way they sort out their policy in the new year when they come back next Friday. And there are, I would say banking crisis is definitely not the top on the list of my concerns. My primary concern is they continue not to be able to marshal their huge pool of savings. We worry about their debt. It's actually the huge pool of savings, which a lot of which tends to gamble on financial markets, a lot of which has actually been driving up commodity prices, and perhaps the biggest unspoken risk for a lot of people this year is the fact that we could at some stage see some unwind of the massive leverage, particularly industrial metals, on the Chinese commodity exchanges, and that would have ramifications for everybody else because commodity prices at the end of the day are all interlinked. And if there's a massive squeeze on the shadow banking sector and its activities in the Chinese commodity futures exchanges, that could have create quite a big shock, even if it's passing.
But how is it possible that China will be able to avoid a hard landing over the next year, 2 years, 3 years? I mean, they can do all their smoke and mirrors and 6.8% GDP growth, but, I mean, at the end, something has to give.
There is no doubt about it that some of the debt that China has needs to be restructured. There's no question about that. Nevertheless, it still has the economy still has a lot of momentum. It does need to do some rebalancing. I think really what people would like to see is some rather more capitalist principles being applied, and that the whole principle of bankruptcy actually be allowed to get some traction. And that will probably tell us...
We should do that here as well with
RBS. Probably, yes, indeed. That will tell us how things are going to develop going forward, because if they carry on playing this game of pass the parcel, then things aren't going to work out too well, and the risk of a bigger crash going forward is just rises exponentially. That said, I think what people always need to remember is have a look at the history of the United States during the 19th century and have a look how many times the US defaulted on its debt. And just think of China being in a similar sort of place, but obviously on a much bigger economy of scale.
Okay, moving on. So the economic calendar, all in the US at the moment. So I think the main one is Theresa May meeting Donald Trump today, but we've also got gross domestic product figures out and USD durable goods orders.
GDP data, I think, is important. I know people really are more interested in what Donald Trump's going to do, what impact it's going to have on the economy, so whatever happened in Q4 is a little bit moot, but it's not. The expectation is that we're going to get headline GDP at 2.2%, which people say, well, that's not very good, but when you have a look at what the Fed's forecasting, it's actually above what they say is the trend rate, which is 1.8, so it's not that bad. Big weight on GDP this time is going to be net exports, i.e. trade, which is likely to deduct about 1 percentage point from the total. So the focus on this one will be on final domestic sales, which are expected to be around 2.3 to 2.5%. Mrs. May's meeting with Donald Trump will have a lot of rhetoric about having a great trade deal. I think the important thing is really here, they're both talking to the wrong people. Mrs. May needs to acknowledge the fact that the UK does the bulk of its trade with the EU. Mm. And Mr. Trump needs to acknowledge that doing a trade deal with the UK is totally insignificant when one considers the amount of trade it actually does with Mexico. Mm. Mexico is very important
for
US trade.
He's got that under control already.
Well, there's 20% tax on imports. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, at the moment, you know, I can see where Mr. Trump's coming from. He's trying to basically steamroller a lot through. And show that he's a man of action rather than a man of words, as so many of his predecessors have been. Nevertheless, creating, you know, tariffs, particularly with Mexico, it's actually going to cost most US companies because the supply chains which have built up since NAFTA came into force 20 years ago are enormous, and those would have to be reorganized or you basically pass on all the costs to the consumer. So really great job there, Mr. Trump.
Yeah. Let's move on because we haven't got much time. So, Zach, what are you seeing there?
People edging back from gold and silver as well as sterling after its recent 5-6 cent move, so which apparently caught some people out. On the other end of the scale, I'm probably looking more at euro sterling, where people are going a bit more going long there, as they are with a dollar Canadian. That seems to be a little bit strange. That could be that could end in tears maybe next week.
Okay, next slide. The trade of the day.
Yeah, good double top there, long candle wicks on tallow oil to take it down here. But basically, the situation now is that we've got a chance to buy the dip and probably towards the 304 area when we get a momentum trigger on the 50-day moving average.
Well, let's move on to the last slide and broker recommendations. And one of my favourites on the Hotel Chocolat.
Yes, I'm the person who pays £3.85 for a bar of chocolate at their many retail operations. I buy one bar a month because that's where my Tip TV salary goes. So obviously they've got margins are rather high. I'm not quite sure what the cost of producing a £3.80, the actual the crude price of the substance is, but I'm sure it's probably around 30p or 40p.
What's more innovative about Hotel Chocolat is how they raise their money with chocolate bonds. So people got what they got back was a box of chocolates each month, which is a nice idea, I think.
I think a lot of people would prefer to have the income.
So on to EasyJet.
Yeah, EasyJet, it's a company the prime investors and others are obsessed by at the moment. Really been hit hard with the falling in sterling. Maybe now towards the £9 area, it could be a recovery situation. Deutsche Bank on a hold there, so it's a bit wishy-washy. And then BT, I think the stock of the week in terms of being a car crash with the Italian accounting issue and then the fall in profits. So just not looking good at all. I suppose the only thing there is just whether the dividend makes up for the misery.
Well, that's one aspect, and I think the other aspect would be the rotation trade, which is so popular these days, with it having effectively gone totally walkabout. There must be other telecom sector stocks, which people say on a relative basis, ignoring all the fundamentals, yes, this surely must be a buy now. But we shall see how that actually pans out.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you. Mark Oswald's there from ADM Investor Services.